The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 515. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Now, my guest for this episode is one half of a phenomenal art studio in England. And that art studio's name is Art 92 Studios. And the person I'm referring to is Helena. Now, she has partnered with Damien to come up with some really awesome comics. And to be honest with you, I kind of highlighted Damien's projects in July of 2025 when he appeared on episode 485. So if you want to hear that and you want to get some more info on some of his projects, definitely stop on over in the archives and check out episode number 485. But we felt like myself and Helena that this would be a more of a conversation about her project, which is called Clear Run. We'll be talking about the third installment of that comic book, which just in one day met its Kickstarter goal. And we're going to talk about that. And by the way, there's still plenty of time left, as I don't think the campaign ends till I think the 22nd of February. So you still have time to check it out and to donate if you'd like to do that. But we're going to talk all about the third installment of this book, which focuses on the adoption of their greyhound, Marty. And they adopted him during the pandemic. And the book follows kind of the ups and downs, especially in issues 1 and 2. And issue 3 is kind of more fun tales about living with a greyhound. So you definitely are going to enjoy this episode if you are a pet person. Before we get into the conversation, I would like to thank a few sponsors of the show. First off, the newest sponsor, Courtney 614 Online Sales. If you need great deals on women's fashions, health and beauty, and its many other items, then look no further than Courtney 614. You can find her on all of those major reselling sites like Poshmark, Whatnot, eBay, etc. Simply look for Courtney, spelled C-O-R-T-N-E-Y, 614, or on some sites, it's Courtney, spelled the same, underscore 614, and you can get yourself some fabulous deals. And if you do get something from Courtney, let her know that you heard about her endeavors from me right here on the PVD Cast. All right, and then I'm going to mention the old school sponsor. Of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. They have tons of comics from every era, the golden, silver, bronze, and modern era, but they also have graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, collectibles, posters, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. They got you covered for your comic book fandom. So if you're in Ohio, stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And you can also check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address, and they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for at WG Comics. And I'd like to thank both those sponsors for their support because it really means a lot to me, and I truly do appreciate it. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'm going to sit down and talk with Helena about Clear Run number 3. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting down this afternoon with Helena from Art 92 Studios, and we're here to talk about a new part to a project that has been going on for a couple of years now. But Helena, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, thanks, John. Thanks for inviting me onto your podcast once again. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's been a minute since we've been on the show.
Sure has.
And it's funny how time flies, you know.
It's a bit frightening, really, isn't it? Yeah.
I like when I spoke to Damien in July of this past year, I told him that I couldn't believe it had been like 4.5
wow.
years. It
wow.
just seemed like a couple of years before that. But man, it just, I don't know. Father Time does not wait on anyone.
It sure doesn't. And I think having the pandemic as well probably bent time a little bit. A lot of the time you kind of, well, I don't know whether you forget it happened or you just think, I want to pretend it never happened. The whole thing didn't happen. So I like to think that in those that period of time, I never got any older. My age stayed the same. I've only just started aging.
Well, let's talk about the project. The project is Clear Run, and you have a third installment coming out. But before we get to talking about that installment, can you give a brief summary of the project for the listeners at home?
I sure can. So probably should start at the beginning, but I won't waffle on too long. So Clear Run came about, the first one came about in, well, the nucleus of it, should I say, started in 2020 because we adopted a rescue greyhound. And he was an ex-racer, so he'd been in the racing industry. He'd been over in Ireland racing. He then stopped winning, so they shipped him over to Wakefield in Yorkshire here in England. And he did a bit more racing there. And then the pandemic happened, and of course everything shut down, and the racing industry wasn't making any money off it, which, you know, I'm not disappointed about because I really don't like the racing industry, the greyhound racing industry. So then he got shipped to Manchester and Cheshire Dogs Home. And then we'd been umming and ahhing about adopting a dog, went to see him, fell in love, brought him home. And then this nucleus of an idea started. I thought, you know, it was a whole thing with greyhounds is oftentimes greyhounds have never been in a home environment. So they've got no idea about washing machines, dishwashers, TVs, hairdryers, all these kind of noises are all a bit, you know, frightening for them. And they warned us that he might need some time to adjust and get used to stuff like that. And he was very, very anxious, very nervous. And this whole kind of thing of him embedding himself into our world, I thought this would make a really nice story. So I started tinkering with some ideas of a comic. And then before you knew it, I'd done the first edition. So I just took the time, didn't give myself any kind of deadlines with it, created Clear Run, and it was pretty successful. And then people went, are you going to do a second one? It's like, well, there's loads and loads of stories involved in this greyhound because he's just such a character. So I ended up doing, and I didn't really plan this. It just happened that way. 2 years later, I did Clear Run 2. And then 2 years after that, I've done Clear Run 3. And Clear Run 3 is the one that's on Kickstarter at the moment. So, and it closes on the 22nd of February, I think it is. So yeah, that's still, you know, bubbling away and people still keep tinkering. I'm hoping I get some last minute people that bite and put some offers in. So yeah, that's the history of the evolution of Clear Run.
And so folks, which we're going to talk a little more in depth about the Kickstarter here in a few moments, but by the time this episode drops, there's going to be about 3 or 4 days left. And it's, even though it's clearly funded, correct?
It is indeed. You never know, you know, people do sometimes withdraw at the end. And I totally get that when finances maybe are not quite what they're anticipating come this time. So I'm always prepared for that just in case. But it got fully funded on the first day, which is super. But then I don't put massive amounts on. I don't go for like, you know, £500, £1,000. I tend to keep it low. And this one was just 300 just to cover my printing costs more than anything.
Now, if I may, and maybe you know, maybe you don't know, when you talk about the racing industry, I'm pretty clueless as to what the dark side of that particular industry is. Can you give us just a quick rundown of some of the things that you maybe learned because you have Marty now?
Yeah. I'll confess, I'm no expert on it. And I'm pretty sure that people might rail against the stuff that I'm about to say and go, no, these dogs are very loved and all the rest of it. But we did a bit of research and we were horrified, to be quite frank. So I've never been a big fan of dog racing or anything where you're making a dog, I don't know, not behaving in a dog-like way. And people go, well, they're fast dogs, and they are very fast dogs. They call them couch potatoes because they basically will sleep 22 hours a day, but then they have this burst of energy. And that's why they race, because they'll run, they'll follow a lure, which is like a, you know, a little furry thing that looks like a squirrel or whatever. They're basically, I suppose I should caveat this by saying I've never been in the racing industry. I've not seen the behind the scenes, but I've read a lot about it. And essentially, some of them get so badly injured because they're racing on a track. They will clack into each other. They end up breaking legs. They end up getting put down because they just cannot. If they get an injury, it's very difficult for them to come back from that and race again. So because they're not racing and they're not making any money for their owner, they just put them down and they'll just get another one. And they start them racing pretty early as well. From when they're puppies, they get to a certain age. It's not all that old, and they get them on the track. They also end up in these kind of concrete kennels with plastic tubs, and they get kennel bum. So ours came to us with two bald patches on his bum, but he's been in a plastic crate. They throw the food on the floor. They'll eat it off the floor. It's raw food and stuff, which is, you know, is not bad for dogs. But when we got him, he was covered in scars. He had chipped teeth. He had some teeth missing where he's been hitting the other dogs as he's been racing. And unfortunately, in the Irish racing industry, if a dog is no longer winning and, you know, is not bringing in money, we're very, very lucky that he escaped Ireland, because what they'll do with them in Ireland is they'll hang them. And then that's it. And which we were absolutely appalled by. But thankfully for us, they shipped him up to Wakefield when he was racing, and then we got him from the dog's home. But bit by bit, there's a lot of campaigns going on, and slowly but surely, they are closing a lot of the racetracks down. I know in New Zealand and Australia, they've been campaigning there to close it down. And I know, you know, at the end of the day, that means people are going to lose their jobs, which is never particularly nice. And I also appreciate that there's an industry there, there's money to be made in there. But for the dogs, it's not a good industry to be in, to be honest.
Well, Helena, I want to say real quickly, and I want to repeat what you mentioned here. This is from your experience. And by all means, yes, we're not stereotyping, or there's probably some wonderful owners of greyhounds who race their dogs and take care of them and love them and all that jazz. Again, this is some of the realities that exist out there. So please,
unfortunately, please, folks, yeah,
no prejudice here, or no stereotyping of owners of greyhounds. We just, I just was curious myself, to be honest. So
yeah, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right, John. To say that is, I don't want to broad brush and say that all greyhound owners and racers are terrible people. Far, far from it. It's just what we've seen, and it's more to do with the injuries more than anything. I'm pretty sure they're loved, but it's just the injuries they can sometimes get on the track is pretty awful. And the thought of any animals suffering in any capacity, you know, it just fills me with horror.
So I have to ask you, why the name Clear Run? What does that mean? What does that indicate? How'd you come up with the name?
So ironically, I've actually borrowed this, or should I say stolen it, from the racing industry, because it is a racing term, and it means that they've gone around the track without hitting anything, without, getting into a tumble with another dog, without, you know, slipping or anything like that. And basically what they refer to that is a clear run right around the track without any issues. So I toyed with numerous names. I had a few working titles, and they all seemed a bit cheesy. I wasn't really that keen on them. And then I thought, well, why don't I borrow from the industry that he's come from? Because at the end of the day, he's come from that industry, and that's what made him, you know, the dog he is. And obviously he must have had a few clear runs, because he came out fairly unscathed from it, apart from a few, like I say, a few scars and stuff. He had nothing broken. He didn't come to us with any major injuries. So he must have had a few clear runs in his time. So yeah, I thought I'd borrow from that. And it seems to have gone down quite well.
One of the things that maybe the listeners don't know, and I encourage you to check out Art92 Studios website and to check out what is available to you in from the catalog of Helena and Damien. But one of the things that you did was you started kind of maybe the precursor to Clear Run is that you used to do pet portraits, correct?
I did indeed, yeah. And it all kind of stemmed from... My sister-in-law, she had a dog that sadly passed away. She has got another dog now. And I did it as a gift, a pet portrait for her, and she absolutely loved it. And then people saw it and went, oh, do you do pet portraits? It's like, well, not really, but, you know, I could do. And then I got more and more requests saying, oh, will you do some pet? Yeah, of course. So off the back of that, really, that's why we set up Art92, so as a business, so we could legitimately take commissions and stuff to do pet portraits and other portraiture, human portrait and stuff like that. So that way we can pay our taxes, so we wouldn't get done by the taxman. And then from off the back of that, it kind of grew and grew and grew. And particularly through the pandemic, a lot of people were requesting pet portraits. And I think it was because people just wanted to do something, get something that cheered them up in a time of real, you know, dire circumstances. They just wanted something that would cheer up family. So I'd get people saying, yeah, I want it for birthdays, you know, coming up to Christmas and whatever. And I think I did one pet portrait for a gentleman, and I said, oh, is it for anything particular? He went, no, he said, it's just to cheer us up. And I thought, how lovely is that? You know, getting a pet portrait done to cheer you up. And then off that, I could have, you know, we got the dog and stuff. And then I thought, well, if I can do pet portraits, let's try and do more comic kind of way of doing a pet. And that's where, you know, I got the kind of style of drawing Marty, the greyhound, in this kind of comic style off the back of that. So, and I still do quite a few pet portraits, not as much these days. I'm too busy, to be quite honest with you, but I still do them and I still tinker. And we got Marty in the middle of the pandemic as well. He became my muse. So I've got a lot of drawings of him. So it's just good practice just to keep your, you know, your finger in doing pet portraits, because sometimes you can get a bit, you know, stiff. You forget how to do it. So I keep on with, if I haven't got any pet portrait on the board, I'll just do a drawing of him just to keep me occupied, you know.
What's been the most challenging aspect to the project?
I think probably, you've probably touched on it with the whole pet portrait thing, is that with a pet portrait, I don't for one minute consider myself to be like photorealistic by any stretch. I'm not a photorealistic artist. I never have been. And I admire people who are. I think it's an amazing skill. But I like to be quite painterly in what I do. So you can tell it's a drawing. But with the drawing, I'll do, you know, I'll make it look hairy. It's got the hair on it. It's got whiskers. It's got all the, you know, all the tiny minutiae of doing a pet portrait. So transferring those skills into doing a comic, I got a little bit bogged down at first. I was doing all the tiny detail. I thought, this is ridiculous. I was getting like one small panel done a week. I thought, I can't work at this rate. I've got to, you know, speed myself a little bit. So I had to try and stop being quite so pernickety about all the little detail and turn him into more of a comic book style animal. So I still keep a painterly style with the way that I draw in a comic. So there's, you know, there's like shading in there and stuff. But I try to not do every single hair. You can see some hair on him because I'll use like a brush digitally that's a hair brush. But I don't go into the minute detail because it's soul destroying, because you think, oh God, I haven't done anything. I'd like to try and get, you know, at least a page of panels are done if I was working for a full day on it, at least get a panel, a full page done. But yeah, that's the biggest thing, is transferring from doing pet portraiture into doing comic book sequential art. And then quite funny is when you go back to doing a pet portrait, it's like, I've got to go back into all the detail now and, you know, redo it all again. So it's that swapping of the styles, you know. But then again, that's the whole thing of being an artist, isn't it? Is being able to transfer those skills and switch from one kind of style to another. So yeah, that's probably the hardest thing, is the switching.
All right, let's go back and talk about the Kickstarter, because it's fully funded, which obviously makes you very, very happy.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. can folks still, as we said, folks could still participate? And
sure. Yeah.
Do you have any like of those perks or stretch goals or anything, or did you kind of keep yours pretty streamlined?
Yeah, I kept it pretty streamlined, really, because otherwise, I mean, Kickstarter is a great platform. They, you know, they do all the admin and stuff. That side is, yeah, you pay for the privilege, but it just takes some of the pressure off. And I also try and keep the tiers fairly simplistic as well. So, you know, you've got your basic PDF tiers, you've got a physical comic book, then you can get clear room 1 and 2 to go with it, clear room 3. And then I've got some tiers which have got little A5 pencil sketches of Marty, original sketches that go with that. And then there's a big tier of what we call the big dog tier, which has got a pet portrait if you want to, you know, you've got a dog or indeed a cat or a rabbit, whatever, a guinea pig. So the pet portrait one in there. I'll do anything, to be honest. I've only got two of them. So again, keeping it fairly simple. But on top of that, there's also, you can have my sketchbook. There's also one where you can have a comic that I did a couple of years ago, which was the H-Files. And there's also some add-ons. So you can have any of the tiers, but you can also have add-ons. If you want my sketchbook, you want other comics, you can do that, or you can keep it as simple as possible and just go for the clear run in, you know, whichever format that you want. So again, I keep it simple for me as well and for the people coming, because I don't know, if I go onto something and I look at all the tiers and go, oh, if I'm spoiled for choice, I can't make a decision. So if we keep it fairly simple, people know what they want and they'll say, right, well, nice and simple, I'll go with that. So yeah, I just keep it simple for my benefit and the people's benefit, really.
Now you've made me curious when you say that you've done dogs, cats, rabbits. What What has been the oddest animal that you have been asked to do a pet portrait for?
I think it's been, I'm trying to think. I think it's been fairly standard, really. I've done cats and dogs. Oh, I'll tell you what I did do. I've just remembered. It was during the pandemic. I think it was either 2020 or 2021. I did a Harris hawk. It was. I thought, oh my God, I've never drawn a hawk. I love raptors. I did do a raptor walk once where I got to fly a Harris hawk with the, you know, the big leather gauntlet with a piece of chicken and stuff like that. That was phenomenal because I find them so majestic, absolutely beautiful animals. Anyway, he's got this guy had contacted me, and he's got a German pointer dog and a Harris hawk because obviously they're gun dogs. And he said, could you put them in the same image? And I had to be honest with him and said, this is going to be complex because they're different sizes and trying to put them in the same image, I think would look a bit odd. You know, they kind of go together because he obviously goes out hunting and stuff. And I thought, so I persuaded him and said, would you mind if we do them as separate images? Because trying to get the scale of them together, I've never seen the Harris hawk and a German pointer together. So I don't know their size difference, to be honest. So anyway, he said, okay, I'll go with that. So I thought, thank goodness for that. So I did a separate, they were both A4, separate Harris hawk and a separate German pointer dog. And he was absolutely chuffed to bits with them. But I'd never drawn a Harris hawk before. And I really, really took my time with it. And it pushed me. It really did push me out of my comfort zone. But that's what art's all about, being pushed out of your comfort zone. Because if you've never done something, how are you going to know if you can do it? So I really enjoyed it. At the end of the day, it was like, that was probably one of my proudest pieces of pet portraiture because it was not your average pet, even though it was his pet, you know? So yeah, that's probably the oddest thing I've done.
And I'm sure he was delighted with it.
He was super delighted because he was local. So I was able to drop it off, save some postage and stuff. So I dropped it off and the German pointer came out and greeted me. Absolutely beautiful dog. Oh, such a gorgeous dog. And I think at that time, I'm not sure if we had a dog at that time. I can't remember. No, we would have done, wouldn't we? Because we got it in 2020. Yeah. So it was a beautiful dog, but I never got to meet the Harris hawk. I don't know where he kept that. I don't think he kept it in the house.
Well, the thought crossed my mind too. I was like, where do you house a hawk?
Exactly. I mean, I'm assuming he's got something out in the garden. I didn't ask, to be honest, but who knows? Who knows? It might be sat on his dining room table. I don't know.
Oh, man. Well, anyways, so I assume there are going to be some more issues coming of The Adventures of Marty.
I think so, because there's a lot of stories about him, and I had numerous ideas for stories because I kind of do a little I don't write it out in like full sort of longhand. I just jot down some ideas for stories and stuff and then think about how the story's going to evolve and then think about what the panels will be. And I had that many stories that I had to be choosy and just pick, you know, a handful of stories to go in the book. So I've got a lot of leftover stories, which I actually started panelling out. I started actually drawing. So absolutely, there's definitely plenty of stuff in there for a clear and four, for sure. But I don't want it becoming tired. I don't want people getting sick of it. So there's probably enough for a four, and I might probably maybe, you know, bring it to a close at four, potentially. I don't know. Watch this space. You never know.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot. What is your favorite Marty story? Whether it's one in the comics or maybe it's one of those extra ones that you just mentioned. Do you have a favorite one?
Oh, do you know, that's a really good one, John, because I think because I adore him so much, all of the stories related to him I absolutely love. But I think probably one of the stories, and it's actually in Clear Run 2, and it's this, it's a little thing, and you probably have to be there, to be honest, but we've got a... And he's a big greyhound insofar as he's tall and he's very long, very lithe. And we've got a corner sofa. So we kind of have one side of the sofa and the other side of the sofa is all for him. He basically put a blanket on it and he can stretch out to his full length on that. And he absolutely loves it. However, the little gap between me and Damien is the sweet spot. He wants to be there. So he'll look at us and give us these big eyes. It's like, can I come between you? And it's like, you've got a whole sofa of your own. Why do you want to come between us? It's because he wants to be between us. So one of the stories, and I did immortalise it in Clear Run 2, is he gets off the sofa and he starts giving us the eyebrows. The eyebrows start going. So we get his blanket, because he's not allowed on the sofa without a blanket, and he knows he's not. to put the blanket on the sofa. He gets between us in this tiny space, spins round and round and round and round, and curls himself up into this tight little ball between us because he can touch Damien's lap and he can touch my lap. And then once he's settled down, it's his favourite place, and then he starts passing gas because he's so like relaxed. It's like, oh, for goodness sake. And honestly, it can burn the hairs in your nostrils. His gas is pretty ripe. So, yeah, that's one of the stories. His ripe gas was depicted as a green smog.
Well, this is kind of a two-part question. It is the best-selling comic. So my first question is, why do you think so many people have picked up a copy? And then secondly, how has the feedback been from someone that has picked up the copy and then gotten in touch with you?
Do you know, that's a really nice question, because I think for your first part of the question, I think it's probably best selling because it's animals. And for the majority of people, I mean, you do come across people who don't particularly, how can I put this? It's not that they don't, they hate animals. They're just not big animal people, which I totally get. But you'll find most people will find this affinity with a comic that's got an animal in it, you know. And I think probably because I've depicted him in this, you know, he was a racer. He came to a home, a dog's home. Then he came to our home. And then we showed him this love, and he was so frightened and anxious. And we managed to, you know, bring him round and make him feel loved and safe and all the rest of it. So I think the reason why it is so sort of well received is because of that, because the main focus is him. We are in it, of course, because, you know, he's not, I haven't anthropomorphized him. He doesn't speak. He might have thoughts, and those are just me projecting what I think he's thinking. I don't for one minute think that he's got these really sort of exquisite, elaborate thoughts. But I think that's one of the reasons. The feedback I've had off people, which I think has been absolutely lovely, particularly from the first one, is that I've got a friend who gave the comic a review, and he's quite a tough guy, you know, and he's you know, not big on showing his emotions, stuff like that. And he said, he gave me this review, and he said, let's put it this way. He said, when you read this comic, you might get a bit of dust in your eye. And I thought, oh, that's just so sweet. So, yeah, so I kind of run on that. I use that, and I've pinched what he said, is that when you read this comic, you might get a bit of dust in your eye. So, you know, that's why your eye is watering. It's like, oh, that's so lovely that I've touched a bit of a nerve with people, and it makes them a little bit emotional, because that's kind of what I was hoping to do, is bring that emotion in him, is the emotion of him being dumped at the home, and the emotion of him coming to our home and feeling safe. So I like that. I like that people can see that. And another bit of feedback I had, a little sort of anecdotal story here, is that a friend of mine who's a teacher, she asked me, she goes, would you mind if I use your, this is the very first comic clear run I did, would you mind if I use your comic book in my reading group? I went, of course you can, of course you can. So I sent her a few copies. And the reason why she was using it is because these kids may be not into reading prose at the moment. And she was using comics, because I think comic books are a great sort of segue into prose for kids who maybe don't read much, but they you know, they can look at the images and look at the stories. And in the first book, I start off black and white. And the black and white is the fact that, you know, it's in three parts. It's his story before he comes to us, our story before he comes to us, and then our story as a family. And it starts off black and white, and bit by bit it starts becoming colour, because he brings colour into our life, and you can see that colour starting to come in. So she didn't tell the kids this, and she said, what can you tell me? Have a read of it. What can you tell me? And they picked up on that straight away and said, he's bringing colour into their lives. And I thought, oh, that's fantastic. If the kids can see that, that's just, you know, my job is done. I think that's wonderful. And I ended up doing a Zoom call with them and talking about how I go about writing a comic. And they had preset questions they were allowed to ask me, which I thought was absolutely lovely. They all put their hands up and asked me questions. And I was delighted that she'd asked me to speak to them, because, you know, getting kids reading by using comic books, then I think that's just fantastic. Yeah. I think I probably may have gone off on a tangent there, John. I hope I've asked you, oh, I've well, answered your okay. question there.
No, you answered the question there. And you know what? I was thinking, because growing up as a child, I was that era, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, when comic books were not seen as real literature.
Yes.
Know, so I also agree that you should get kids reading whatever they want to read. You know,
absolutely.
If they want to read
absolutely
nursery rhymes or comic books or skateboarding magazines or whatever.
Totally.
I feel like that is an easy way to get kids to. You can always change the genre and the complexity of their text. But if you got to get them, you got to get them reading first of all.
Absolutely right, John. And it's this, there can be a little bit snobbery around comic books, which really annoys me. You know, it's like, oh, you're into comic books, are you? Have you not grown up? It's like, oh, you've got no idea, have you, at all? And I think we do a book fair every year, and we got invited to it, the first one that they did. And it was a lovely lady from our local library, and she'd seen us at a local comic convention. And she came over and she went, would you be interested in doing a book fair? And I went, well, we don't really do books, we do comics. She goes, they're books in my eyes. And I thought, how lovely is that? You know, and we went to this book fair, and not a single person looked down the noses at us, which I thought was absolutely wonderful. And getting kids coming over and picking books up and reading it. And it warmed my heart to see so many kids coming over and picking things up and reading stuff. It's just absolutely wonderful.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. They got you covered for your comic book fandom. So if you're in Ohio, you should stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But you can also check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address, and they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for @WGComics. Well, a couple few more questions here real quick before we start wrapping things up. Real quickly, you're talking about you've done some book fairs, conventions, whatnot. Do you have any on the agenda for the next few months or whatnot?
We've got we've got something coming up in, oh goodness me, I think it might be latter part of summer actually, down in Gloucester, which is a bit of a trek. But we're trying to do be a bit clever here and have maybe a few days away in a dog friendly hotel so we can take Marty with us. And we can do a swapsies, you know, Damien can like man stall. I'll go out for a bit, have obviously Marty with us. And then he can come out, we can swap so we can do and give him a comfort break, because nothing worse than being on a stall on your own and you're desperate for the bathroom. So we've got that coming up. I think we've applied for a couple more, but we try and keep it, apart from the Gloucester one, we try and keep it fairly close to home, because otherwise, we don't make a great deal of money at comic conventions, to be honest. We do it for the love of it. We do it for meeting people, having a chat, getting our name and stuff out there. So we need to try and make it, so we need to break even. By the time we've paid for petrol or stopping over, we end up making a loss. So we can keep it fairly local. We'll definitely do Wigan again. And I think we were looking potentially at doing, we've only sort of scratched the surface of looking at this, possibly doing like a horror convention over in Sheffield, which isn't that far from us in the scheme of things, which might be good because we do a lot of horror art as well. And Damien certainly does quite a lot of horror art. He's currently working on a series of beautiful acrylic paintings of based on horror movies and stuff. So yeah, we tend to keep things close to home and maybe keep within a kind of 30 to 40 mile radius of where we live. Just plus we've always got to think of the dog. The dog takes with anything that we do, you know, is he going to be comfortable? Can we get home in time and all the usual stuff for comfort breaks for him more than anything?
If I remember correctly, too, we talked off air. Do you have a cutout of Marty?
We do indeed, yes. It's one of these things where we've got, obviously, as you know, with comic convention, we've got the big pull-out banner behind us that advertises and stuff like that. But we recently, we trialled it at the book fair in December. We got this cardboard cutout of Marty, and he sits on our table. And, of course, the idea is that it you know, it's an eye-catcher for people. If they're walking around the corner, go, ooh, what's this over here? So they come over and we can offer them, do you want a picture with our dog, you know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's the closest thing we've got to having him at our table. But alas, we can't have him at our table. But that being said, another little anecdotal story for you. We did do a little thing. It was last year. We've got this old priory in Runcorn, which is not that far from us, and it's an old priory, and they have it open to the public, and it's dog friendly. So we've taken him there, and we take him around the grounds and stuff like that. And they had a little event, and they asked if we'd like to come and do but they've asked me to do a workshop there, to do some pet portrait workshops, and also if we can have a stall. I said, oh, that'd be fantastic, and you can bring the dog, great stuff. So we took him, and he was our pride and joy, and he was behind the table and stuff. So we go, oh, we can we meet the dog? Yeah, of course you can. But of course, because he's so so shy and anxious, he got a bit distressed. So I went off to go and do my my little workshops with people, which was a great success. It was lovely to see, you know, families, parents and kids coming, because parents going, oh, we're not coming. I'm like, no, come on. So I was teaching all these people. But while I was away, he got quite distressed because I wasn't there. And people were going, oh, can we pet him? And Damien's going, yes, of course you can. But then he started dry retching. This is the dog, not Damien, because people were trying to pet him. And it's like, oh, bless him. He gets so distressed. And, you know, he's not reactive. He would never nip anybody or bark or get. But he was like, where's my mum? I don't like people petting me. So maybe he wouldn't be very good if we were at a comics convention. He was behind the table. I don't think he'd do very well with people going, oh, can we pet him? No, he's going to dry retch. It's not a good look.
Now, real quickly, you did mention some other genres. You mentioned the H-Files is something that you worked on a few years ago, which, if I remember correctly, is kind of a paranormal story, correct?
Yeah, it's one of these things. It's like kind of one and done, although, you know, I'm still tinkering with the idea of maybe doing a second edition, but to be honest with you, John, I haven't got the time. But yeah, that was just a one-off, and how that started was it's based on Welsh folklore. For people who don't know, I am Welsh, born and bred. So I quite like the whole old Welsh folklore stuff. And I picked up a Welsh folklore book and I thought, I could do something with this, because the Welsh folklore has been passed down from generation to generation. So there's no, what's the word I'm looking for? There's no copyright on it, because it's just been passed down from generation. So I thought, why don't I take some of these stories and put my own twist on them? So I slightly changed them just in case there was anything to do with copyright on it. And then I created this character called Kerris, which is a good old fashioned Welsh name. And she was a librarian by day and a paranormal detective by night. So she basically investigated these paranormal stories. And that was how I did it. I'd have these pages, which was her note-taking about what she needs to do and what she needs to look into. And then it'd go into the story, and then that story would end and there'd be note-takes. And I thought, oh, I wonder how this might go. And I kickstarted that as well. And that went really, really well. And it's quite a good seller at book fairs and at comic conventions, because people are quite taken with it. They go, what's it about? So I big it all up and say, you know, it's a Welsh detective and she's going into this all paranormal stuff. And it's quite funny because I'm a rationalist. I don't believe in anything paranormal, but I love the idea of it. I just love that side of it. So people go, oh, are you into all this? I went, not really, but I quite like it, because I just find it quite fascinating where these stories originate from, because oftentimes there is a nucleus of reality in it somewhere, and then people have just blown it out of proportion. But I love it, and I did it in the whole comic is drawn in a charcoal style, but digitally. So I thought it was, because it gives it that dark, gritty, scratchy feel to it. So, yeah, I might take that up again and pick up another book, but maybe not keep it just on Welsh folklore, but maybe look at doing. We went to Hay on Wye last year, which is a town just on the border of England and Wales. And it's known that they have the Hay on Wye Book Literature Festival every year. So it's known as a town of books. And there's so many bookshops there. And I picked up another folklore book and I thought, I might be able to do another comic on this, so watch this space.
You know, and I'm gonna throw it out there for folks, if you're interested in what Damien has been working on, the other half of Art 92, jump on over to episode 485 from this past July. Damien and I talk about GGA, which is the Galaxy Grappling Alliance. We talk about the H-Files, we talk about a bunch of different other projects. Yeah, and I think even we included Claire Run, I think, a little bit of that. But if you're interested, definitely check out episode 485. And where can folks check out what Art92 Studios has going on, Helena?
Yeah, sure. So we're on Instagram as Art92. We're on Facebook, Art92. We've got the website, which is www.art92.com. And that's about it. And I confess, I've got a bit of a love-hate relationship with social media. And I probably don't sort of publicize as much as I should do. I'm trying to. I've just recently set up an Instagram page for Clear Run and Marty. So it's just Clear Run Marty, just purely to do with him and the comics and any sort of stuff about him. So it cuts out all the extraneous stuff of my art or you know, Art92 as our art. It's purely to do with him. But yeah, I've got a bit of a love hate, but we need social media to get ourselves out there. Otherwise, it's pointless keeping it you know, stuck here in the studio, who's going to know where we exist? So I do try and keep it up to date as much as I can. So yeah, so any, if you just type it in at Art92 and you'll find us on the socials, apart from we're not on X anymore for obvious reasons that I won't go into. But yeah, we're not on there. But yeah, all the rest we are. And I do try and put some stuff on there, which you've guilted me, John. I need to put some stuff on there pretty soon, I think.
Yes, you will have some stuff from me that you could put on there. But anyways, you know, in all seriousness, it is the necessary evil. You got to have the social media in order to get your book out there, your project out there, whatever. Yeah. And if you don't do it, then no one's going to hear about it. And that's unfortunate because people should hear what you have to say or have to draw or have to sculpt or whatever your genre is.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. And it's that thing of, you know, with social media as well, there's that thing of, I'm a bit nervous about sharing this. And you get this kind of imposter syndrome going on. It's like, well, if you don't put it out there, nobody's going to know, you know, and just, you've just got to bite the bullet and go, let's put it out there and see what happens. And it's not about the kind of, it's not about getting hundreds and hundreds of likes, the clicks and all that kind of stuff. It's just putting it out there. And if people like it, they go, oh, you know, and we do get the odd kind of, inquiry about a commission or something, and so and we often say, can I ask you, where did you hear about us? Oh, I saw it on Facebook, or somebody shared it. And you think, well, if it got to one person and we got a commission out of it, then it's doing something good, isn't it? You know, so yep. Yeah, definitely.
All right, Helena, thank you so very much for sitting down and chatting with me this afternoon. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you so much, John, for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure, and it always is a pleasure talking to you, John, even though I've only spoken to you twice. It is a pleasure.
Well, thank you for that. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Helena from Art92. Talking about Clear Run, the entire project, as well as the newest issue, issue number 3. And I hope that you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, I want to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you have a comment about this episode, or any episode for that matter. First off, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Just look for @PVDcast. You can also still find me on Twitter. Yeah, I know, I'm still on Twitter. My handle over there is PVDNVP. And of course, if you want to be old school, you can shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. Maybe you'd like to help me out and spread the word a little bit about how you can hear the show. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that as well. First off, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and probably the best place to get every single new episode. But of course, the PVDcast is also available through all of those major podcasting outlets. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast outlet or app, go into the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And since we're talking about those outlets and apps, let's make sure that we are rating and reviewing. It helps me out so much in the algorithm. I really do appreciate it. And heck, while we're there, you might as well subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. There's a third and final way that you can hear the show, and that is on Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, through the Facebook page. I do a live broadcast of the week's episode. So there's 3 easy ways to hear the show: PVDcast.com, your favorite outlet or app, and of course, on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, through the Facebook page. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you one more time for checking out the show. And with that, I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2026.